Welcome to Photography Insight, the show that interviews people in the photography world. For episode 62, we have a talented commercial photographer who shoots film in New York. This is Christina Blanarovich, aka Christina Zen. Now, Christina moved across to film after years of shooting weddings on digital. She bought a Contax 6 before and never looked back. So she talks to us about her experiences and provides great insight into learning to use film stock effectively. Christina shoots a variety of food, lifestyle and other commercial related work. You can see lots of her lovely images on her website, and the food images are especially mouthwatering. She also mentors with one-on-one sessions, so if you're looking for help, look no further. Of course, Christina goes through our random questions to find out what would Jesus's social handle be, or if she chooses Julia Roberts or Patrick Swayze. Now, before I leave you to listen to our wonderful guest, please do remember to support the show by sharing with your friends and leaving a review on iTunes. It only takes a minute. So let's play the intro and introduce your host. That's me, Andrew Walmsley. Welcome everybody to the latest show. I have with me Christina. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Yeah, good then. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to get you on the show. It's been another one I've been really looking forward to, especially after seeing your photos. I was like, oh, I need to speak to you, definitely.
You are too kind. Thank you.
No, that's cool. So for anyone listening, Christina's work came through me following Mr. Shotkit, as some people call him. That's Mark at shotkit.com. A fabulous resource for, well, traditionally wedding photographers, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think that's how they started, is focusing on the wedding photographers. But now it's really gone into lifestyle, portrait, commercial work. Mark has done a great job of kind of just getting everybody together. It's a really good community.
And I thought it was a really good resource, because there's forums and stuff. Everyone talks about gas and buying equipment. But he was documenting what, you know, people like yourself, the professionals, were using.
That's true. I think a lot of people focus on, I just need the best equipment, I need the newest equipment. But, you know, it's really nice to see what other people are using on the day-to-day basis.
Yeah. And I found that actually really useful. So, like, when you're first setting up and looking around, you're like, well, do you actually need this? Do you need this? Do you need that? But then, you know, people like yourself are saying, I use this lens for this, and this is why I have it. It's not a case of, I've got every lens I need. It's two or three favorites, usually.
Absolutely. And I think that's normal. The longer you are doing photography, the more you pare down. I mean, I know that when I started, I had that mental, you know, mindset of, I need all these lenses. I need all these cameras. I want the newest and the best. But then, you know, as the years progressed, I started selling things off. I just really started honing in on the actual gear that helped me do the job that I wanted to do. So my kits got so much smaller, you know, as things went on. So much smaller.
Do you think, like, looking at what the other professionals were using as well made like an influence on you?
Yes and no. I think it helped me to see what a lot of people were doing. And I think when I'm looking to upgrade, or when I was looking to change a system, I kind of looked around to see what my friends and what people that I admire are kind of gravitating towards. But I wanted to make sure that it was for the right reason. If they're shooting the same types of commercial work that I'm shooting, I mean, commercial work is a very different field than wedding photography. So the equipment you used for that, in my opinion, is different. So it was nice to kind of look at other commercial photographers and say, okay, these are the systems that I'm thinking of that I have researched and I like, and who uses them and how do they use it? So that going on ShotKit and kind of looking at that really helped me kind of, after I did my research, solidify my choices.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. I've watched a few of the volumes come about, and I've really liked what he's been doing now. He's got in touch with analog photographers as well, hasn't he?
Yes,
so
you being one of them.
Exactly. So it was really nice, and I thought sometimes there's arguments between analog and digital shooters, and there's this sort of grey area where people say, well, I used to do it and it's memories, but to some of us it isn't. It's, you know, we make this choice, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for me, I started as a digital shooter, and that's something that people get surprised at. I actually started as a digital shooter, and when I did weddings, my first three or four years of weddings was strictly digital. That was it. And then there came a time where I just said to myself, you know, I'm feeling burnt out. I was shooting a ton of weddings. I was very successful. I was doing great, but I felt like there was something missing. There was this need to kind of keep up with the digital technology of everybody else that was doing it. And I kind of went just the other direction. And I said, you know what, I'm going to buy a film camera. I mean, I hadn't had a film camera since I was in, you know, probably high school back in, you know, the early 90s.
Okay.
And so it was a long time. My last time I touched a film camera was definitely a consumer, you know, probably I think one of those little send-in ones that you can, you know, get done.
Oh, yeah.
So I bought a film camera out of the blue and just decided I'm going to start doing this. And I only had the idea of doing it for my personal work to help me become a better photographer, just because I wanted to challenge myself. And then I fell in love with it. And lo and behold, a year later, I was a film shooter. Well, you know, things happen very rapidly.
I think so too.
But I feel like film is just, for me, it's a medium that expresses the way I see the world. I love the soul that film has. It has a richness, a depth. It's actually less perfect than digital. Digital it's far sharper. It's far more accurate. But film is how I see the world. Film is how, when I'm looking at something and I see that little bit of beauty, I could be looking at a regular scene that most people are just like, oh, that's just somebody walking by a street. And I'm like, yes, but I'm seeing this movement. I'm seeing this light. And film sees that. And digital, it kind of sort of can, but it's not the same. That's why I tend to do even most of my, I mean, when I was weddings, I was mostly film. When portraits was all film, but even in my commercial work, I shoot film probably 75% of the time.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah. And digital has its place. I think digital is great for, you know, low light scenarios. I have some commercial clients that want a really fast turnover. So obviously I do still need to shoot digital and be proficient in digital. But I shoot digital very much like I shoot film. I'm a very slow, and I don't mean it slow. I'm a very intentional digital shooter. I feel like a lot of times digital shooters are very rapid fire. Because you can be, but with film, you learn to be more intentional. I never miss a shot. I've always had people at weddings be like, but how can you shoot film at a wedding? Aren't you worried you're going to miss the shot? And I say, no, because it forces you to anticipate the moments.
Yeah.
You know, shooting film and you having only, you know, 16 shots in your medium format camera at a time, you have to be more intentional. You have to be ready for what's about to happen. So it's a totally different way of thinking.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. My first wedding, second shot, I shot film.
Nice.
The very first one, my second one, I shot film. My third one, I'm gonna shoot film. It's all part of it, but you know, I've been saying I'm gonna shoot digital because I need to make sure I can deliver. But I'm gonna back it up at the same time. I mean, I was stood there ready with my digital as the couple came through. But at that point, I'd already shot the people in the room with medium format. So I was just bang, 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 bang. You know, that was my 16 shots. And it was fabulous because, you know, 95% of them came out. You only have to meet once when you know what you're doing, don't you?
If you, my friends call me like a human light meter because at this point, after shooting for so long, I can walk into any room, any lighting situation, and I'm like, all right, if you're shooting Fuji 400, rated at 200, you need to be at, you know, F125 right now, and you know, just figure it out, or F2 at 125 shutter speed. You know, it's just you kind of just instinctively know what you're supposed to be doing after a while. I don't think there are days that I forget my light meter and it's not a big deal.
I'm with you on that. I say to people, I've learned metering by not by choice, but because of my eyesight's changed so bad. I now can't read anything right in front of me without glasses. So for me, analog photography is fantastic because I don't take my glasses out. I can't see meters. I can't see what I'm doing. So if I'm at the end of a film, I'm pretty much stuffed because I'll not know how many exposures I've took. So I just take enough film with me to cover me. I have to meter by eyesight because that's all I've got. And it's changed the quality of my work. I get more exposures correct now.
Great. And I think that's the key is just being confident, practicing enough and being confident in your work and confident in knowing like I can do this. I remember I got my film camera. Because I do things in an extra sort of way. My very first film camera that I bought was a Kontakt 645. So, you know, I just decided why not. I got it in the mail. I hadn't even tested it out. I had film and I literally was the mailman was coming into my driveway as I was leaving to go to a shoot. And I threw it in the car and I unpacked it right before my couple got there and I was like, "Hey guys, I'm going to shoot film."
Oh my God.
So, I shot dual. I shot digital and film at the same time. I went through, I think, 8 rolls of film. When I got it back, I had already edited their digital. I scrapped probably, I don't know, maybe 75% of their digital images. I was like, I don't even want to deliver these anymore. I loved the film that much. And I was just like, okay, I'm going to start doing this. I shot 3 weddings shooting both film and digital, like side by side. And then I realized, why am I doing this to myself? Why am I trying to match my digital to film? And I'm backing up everything that I'm shooting. I'm just gonna shoot film. So wedding number four, the fourth wedding I got after I had after getting my film camera, I just started shooting film.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's really nice. I mean, one thing probably a lot of people would ask though is considering the abundance of digital photographers now, can you still make money doing shooting film?
Oh, absolutely. I actually have people come to me because I shoot film. I would say when I was shooting weddings, when I was solely a wedding photographer, I would say at least half of my clientele came to me because I was a film shooter and they wanted film. The other half, I would hear the same phrase over and over. People would say to me, "There's something about your work that's just different. I can't put my finger on it, but it just looks different than everyone else's." And I was like, "Yeah, that's film. That's film." So even in commercial work, I mean, if you look at my commercial website, 95% of the images on my website are film. I still have commercial clients that come to me because I shoot film, or come to me and say, the quality, the colors in your work are so unique. They're so different. It just has this quality that we don't normally see. And it's like, yeah, that's film. So I absolutely think that there is a market for film, and there are people out there who will happily hire a film shooter.
That's interesting. That's good. I mean, obviously, I did spend a lot of time on your site, and that's one of the things I saw, that the images that, were obviously lovely. You've got a fantastic website. It's lovely and clean. I like that sort of look. You
Thank
can
you very
see you've
much.
put time in it.
It's gone through a lot of evolutions, a lot of evolutions, but it definitely reflects. I'm really loving it right now because it definitely reflects who I am as an artist. And I think, I spent 10 years in weddings and portraits, and now having transitioned into commercial work, I'm taking what I've done with the weddings and portraits and doing that in commercial photography. Most people see commercial photography as just, they think of a white background and harsh light and this like product floating, or very, very sterile, or I don't know. It's just this image people have, very fake kind of commercial work.
I would say that,
But what I tend to do is it's more lifestyle. I'm still telling a story. I'm just telling a story of a brand, or I'm telling a story of a restaurant or food or the product, whatever it is I'm working with. I'm still focused on the storytelling aspect of it and how it's reaching out to a client or a customer. And I think film has really helped me separate myself from a lot of other commercial photographers who are kind of very similar in their approach. It's that very high key lighting, a lot of Photoshop, where I don't Photoshop. I mean, I know how to if it's necessary, but I choose not to do that for most of my work because I want it to have more of that organic feel. I want you to feel like you're inside of a magazine.
Well, I think if you've nailed your exposure, and you set your lighting up right and the product's there, I often wonder, what do we edit and why? I've done it. I did a shoot about a month ago with some models. It was a Halloween theme, and I took a few photos, and I was like, right, I don't actually know how to improve this. Either I'm so bad I don't understand editing, or the photo's actually all right as it is.
I think photography for, and this is actually what happened when I started on film. I felt like back in, I think it was 2012-ish, around that time frame, there was a really big push for just the very dramatic lighting and the heavy photoshopping and people, I mean, they were doing, it was very trick photography oriented at that time. It was a lot of, and it's beautiful. I have friends who did unbelievable work with gels on their lighting and all this stuff. And it was impressive. It was gorgeous. It was out of this world, but it wasn't me. I looked at it and I could appreciate the beauty of it, and I could appreciate the time and the effort and the expertise that it required. But there was no part of me that wanted to do that wanted to replicate it. And so it was that at that time that I was like, well, I'm not going in that direction. I don't want to go in that direction, even though I understand the technical. I mean, I know my lighting up and down. I can do any type of lighting that anybody needs. But that's not what fuels me as an artist. That's not where my artistic brain wants to go. So it was at that time that I said, I need something different. I want something less technical in one sense, although film is quite a technical feat in itself, but I wanted something more organic. I wanted something that just felt more natural and allowed me to be closer with my clients. And that's where film came in.
Totally understand that. So what's your choice of equipment then?
So for film, when I do shoot film, my workhorse is still my Contax 645. I tend to use that for most of my medium format, and I've used plenty of others. I've tried, the Pentaxes and the Mamiyas and all that. I think it's probably because I started with the contacts. That was the first one that I bought, and I bought it right before the contacts boom happened. So it was like I
Oh,
bought,
wow.
so I bought my contacts. Is I had two of them, and I both bought them both right before everybody started buying them. So I still got them at a good price. And I always say, I think I bought the best two contactses on the planet because I have never had issues with them. Like all the issues that people like complain about, like, oh, the contacts is slow or it doesn't autofocus well or it doesn't. Mine are gems. They are so
Okay.
beautiful. They work so well. They've been good to me. So that's still my main workhorse for when I do any type of brand work, portrait work, food photography. I'm always on that contacts. I also use anytime I do type of travel work or street work, or I want more of that gritty vibe, I use my Rolleiflex. I have a Rolly 2.8. I love the feel of that. And I love how I can be, because it's a waist finder and it's super silent and I'm just kind of looking down and nobody really notices that I'm shooting, I can get behind the scenes a lot more with that. And people, when you put a camera up to your face, it's like everybody kind of pauses and notices. But when you're kind of just shooting from the waist and you're kind of casually looking down, people don't really notice that. And so you can have that fly on the wall kind of journalism feel. So those are my main film cameras that I use for paid client work. I have a lot of other film cameras that I use just for personal work or travel. But those are my main client work. And then digitally, I switched recently from I was a Canon shooter just for weddings. And then I switched to the Fuji GFX 50R, so the medium format Fuji is what I'm shooting now. And I love it because I feel like it really it has a lot of similar qualities to the medium format film that I'm shooting. So I can really kind of, obviously I have to edit it, but I can tweak it and make it feel more like my film than any other camera that I've used.
Medium format is amazing. I love the stuff. It's just something I only shoot really. But my
It is.
camera's off getting fixed. I'm a bit of
Oh.
a Yeah, and I'm hoping it's fixed for the wedding I'm doing because I've got about 8 weeks. So,
Fingers
yeah.
crossed.
What's your choice of film then? Do you change it a bit or do you stick?
So I am probably one of the rarer film photographers that likes to shoot all different sorts of film stock. I'm not a light and airy film photographer. I love color. I love contrast. I love dark blacks, and I don't like to just shoot one film stock because I feel like if, and this is what I preach too. When I'm teaching classes or when I'm speaking, I'm always saying this. I feel like you need to be able to shoot any film stock in any situation and know how to make it consistent for your work. If I have a preference, I tend to kind of, I love Portrait 800. It is just beautiful. But not always is Portrait 800 going to look great. It has a tendency to go a little orange. It has a tendency to sometimes be too vibrant in certain situations. So although it's one of my favorite, films for color, it's not always a practical film. I love to shoot Fuji 400, but I shoot my Fuji 400 and I push it. I don't shoot it light and airy. I push it a stop just to give it a little extra oomph, a little extra contrast. And so I did this one talk at WPPI a couple of years ago, and I spoke for the Fine Lab, who is my lab of choice. And I basically showed images. I showed four different images, and I said, "Can anybody guess what film stock this is?" And people were guessing all over the place, and they're like, "Oh, that's all, Fuji, or that's all Portra 800." And I was like, "Actually, this one is Portra 160. This one is Portra 400, this one is Portra 800, and that one is Fuji 400. And people's jaws just drop. They're like, but the colors are all the same. How did you get it so consistent? The skin tones look the same. The colors look the same. And I said, well, because in each lighting scenario, I know how I want my final images to look. So for each lighting scenario, I know what film is going to give me that look that I'm going for. You know, I know how I like Fuji 400 to look. I like it to be moody and dark and you know, more mysterious looking. I don't want it to be super sunny and bright, you know? So I feel like every film shooter needs to master the different stocks and know how to make their stock look the way they want their look to look, not make the stock just, well, I hear a lot of people that say, well, this is just how Portra 100 or 160 looks. And I'm like, but it doesn't have to. Your work shouldn't change based on the film stock you're using. You should be able to use your film stocks to make your work consistent.
That's good.
At least that's my way of thinking.
That's really good. So you must have to shot enough for the film. So is it always pushing rather than pulling?
I've never pulled film. So the difference between pushing and pulling. Pushing, basically, a lot of people think that pushing adds light. It doesn't. It adds color and contrast because what pushing is technically doing is it's just letting it sit in the developer a little bit longer. And that allows the contrast to come out, that allows the color to come out. Now, generally, we do push when we are rating higher. So we are in, and I say this in quotes, we are mimicking adding a little bit more light, but it's really not adding the exposure. Pulling would be letting it sit for less time. So it's like if you technically overexpose too much, but I've never seen that work well. That's just not a personal preference, but I usually will push, I push most of my film. I've even pushed Portra 800. I've pushed, I love to shoot Ektar and I love to shoot Ektar pushed. I push it either +1 or +2. I find that it mellows it out. Ektar has a tendency to go very red on skin tones. And when you push it, it mellows out that redness. That's a little trick that I learned from Jonathan Canlis. So he was the one that figured that one out and shared that with the world. So I appreciate that, John. Fuji, I don't think I've ever shot Fuji and not pushed it. I just like the look of it with that more contrast. But like I said, I'm not an airy film shooter. I like things that have some kick to them, some oomph to the image.
Oh, that's cool. So is that just metering for higher ISO, or are you talking about development as well?
I actually push it in development. So when I send my film out to the lab, I write, you know, +1 or +2 on it. And I let them know that I actually want this to sit a little longer in development so that it allows it to kind of have those deeper blacks and things like that.
So no, it's cool. Yeah.
And sometimes I'll meter box speed. Sometimes I'll meter, you know, it depends on the situation. And I think a lot of this just comes with trial and error and being able to get out there and practice. People come to me all the time and say, but how do I get to know what to do? And I was like, you have to shoot film. You have to blow through rolls and rolls and rolls of film in different lighting scenarios and not be worried about the cost. And I think that's really hard for new film shooters to get over is, but it costs so much to shoot it. So I don't want to just blow my money and get bad images. And it's like, but unless you do that, unless you start to bracket and you go outside with a roll of film and say, I'm going to shoot this 10 different ways and I'm going to write it down so I know what I'm doing, you'll never know what you like. And it doesn't matter how any photographer that you admire shoots, it's how you use the film. It's how you like to shoot it that matters. And that's going to kind of create that individual look for you. So you got to get out there and you have to shoot the film. You have to just play around.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, another thing is we all live in different countries. Obviously, you're in New York, I'm in the UK. The light I get here is so different to you. I was talking to a Kodak rep at the weekend about this, and I was saying how poor my black and white is since I started film. I started really good, swapped a colour, I've never looked back, I've only shot colour. Take a black and white shot, it is just grey, absolute rubbish. And he said the same thing about his, and he was saying one thing you've got to watch out for is in the UK, I'm a bit north compared to some, we don't get as much light, and we're comparing ourselves to people in France and, you know, places like New York, LA.
Oh, I mean, just the difference between California and New York is unbelievable. I have some very close friends who are film shooters in California, and I'm always busting on them. I'm like, you guys have perfect light. You have perfect, golden, rich, warm light. And we don't get that here in New York. We get in the summertime for maybe 1 month, for about an hour at the end of the day when the sun is setting, we'll get that golden light. But the rest of the year, like especially now as we're moving into fall and then winter, our light turns harsh. It turns cold and gray and it's not pretty. And it's funny because I'll have friends who come here from California to shoot and they're like, what's with the light? I'm like, yeah, no, it's different.
Come to the UK.
Well, I've been there and I think it's great because I'm used to that in, you know, gray winter of New York with the buildings, like it's no different. I remember I did a workshop in Ireland a couple of years ago and it was just so funny how one day we had beautiful sun and it was in July. So, you know, it was fairly warm. So we had beautiful sun one day and the rest of the time was just this gray overcast. And some of the attendees were just freaking out because they're like, I don't know how to do this. How do I get the film? What do I do? And I'm like, really? Gray overcast is surprising, but they were from California. So, so it is, the quality of light is very different and how you shoot in that light is different. And I think that's really important. I see a lot of like film workshops that are taught in wonderful places like Southern California or the south of France and or Italy. And it's like, oh, okay, try teaching a film workshop in Iceland where every day it's raining and cold. Yeah. Then we'll talk, but it just gives you a different, presents different challenges. And that's where, again, I think being able to shoot any film stock will really give you kind of the variety for the weather. I mean, and that's what I'll do. Like if I have a session or if I had a wedding on a really dreary, gray, dark, overcast day, I would use a different film stock than if I had a wedding on a day that was blue skies and bright sun, because they're just going to look different. So
what would you use on a gray day then? What would your choice be?
My general choice on a really gray overcast day is going to be Portra 800, because I know that the film stock in and of itself has so much warmth and color to it, so that I can meter it a little bit lower. I usually would meter it at like maybe an ISO of 200 or 400, and then shoot it as just regularly and develop it regularly, just to allow it to have a little bit more light for that. But I wouldn't necessarily push it, because on a really, really gray overcast day, pushing sometimes gives too much contrast. So that's where playing around, it all goes back to shoot every film stock, shoot it in different light scenarios, because you have to know how film is going to react on a bright day, on a, you know, an overcast but bright day, or a very overcast and dark day. It's going to look different each time.
Yeah, that's a cool skill, without a doubt. Yeah, it's something we all need to know. Now, obviously, something you've said, you are shooting food. How did that happen then, compared, because it's so different.
It is so different. So I had a good 10-year run of weddings and was very successful in them and going all over the world shooting weddings. But I have two little boys, 8 and 10, And when they were babies, it was actually really easy to shoot weddings because I'd see them all during the week. And then, you know, it doesn't matter if mom's gone on the weekends. But as they got more school aged and sports became, you know, more important to them, I was missing soccer games. I was missing, you know, just so much of their life. And it was because weddings are always on weekends. And then, especially if you are traveling for weddings, you're gone Friday through Monday. Or sometimes Thursday through Monday. So I knew, you know, about 2 years ago, I knew that something has to give. I want to make a transition. And just kind of randomly, I started looking around and seeing like, what else would I really like doing? Like I don't mind doing portrait work, but I didn't want to be a strict portrait photographer. I like to work more with my clients that I have. And I didn't really want to just be doing like family portraits. So I was in Barnes and Noble of all places in a bookstore, and I started flipping through. I was looking for recipes, and I was looking through this recipe book, and I'm looking at these pictures of this food, and I was like, this is gorgeous. And then I'm looking, I'm like, this is film. I know this is film. So I actually bought the book, went home, looked up who the photographer was, and found out that they're a film food photographer. And I was like, look at that. You can do film on with food. Okay. So from there, I started to kind of look more into commercial work because I never wanted to do the very stuffy corporate headshot commercial stuff. That again, that didn't resonate with me. But from seeing that, I started to look into it more and I realized there is a market out there for it, but it's a very small market. But I knew that. I feel like that's where people are going. I feel like a lot more people now want a more organic feel to their business. They want their business to be more approachable. They want their business to feel like an old friend as opposed to a corporation. So I felt like there's a need for the type of commercial work that I wanted to do, that still telling a story like I did with weddings, but doing it for, you know, somebody who's trying to make money off their products. And so I kind of started dabbling, and literally I would cook meals and I would set things up and just start dabbling and taking pictures. And my family hated me because I'd be like, no, don't touch it. You can't eat it yet. Hold on. I gotta take some pictures. And then I realized that's not good with two hungry boys. So I would do that differently. And I just started kind of randomly posting that on my Instagram, and people started reaching out to me and saying, hey, I really like that. That was really great. So it was my husband that actually encouraged me. He's like, you are done. You don't want to do weddings anymore. Why don't you just pursue this? And I just started to reach out to some people, and I said, here's a sample of my work. I built my portfolio on my own, and I reached out to a bunch of people. I started putting together marketing materials and sending it out to food bloggers, sending it out to chefs, sending out to restaurants. I love food. I love to cook, so I knew that that was like a natural place that I wanted to go. But then I also started sending it to, you know, just brands that, you know, I felt aligned with my look, and it kind of exploded from there. People just enjoyed what I did, so that it was a different look, and it's kind of just been spreading through word of mouth and growing that way.
Wow, that's really cool. So, do you actually, well, this is the most important question. Do you get to eat any of the food?
Get to eat the food. That is honestly the best part of being a food photographer, is usually
Oh.
when you're done, you get to eat the food. Yes.
You sign me up, why don't?
Especially when it's like some decadent dessert and you're like just staring at it and they're like, do you want to go ahead and eat that? I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
I've been waiting for you to say that. Yes,
Wow,
you do get to eat the food.
that's a really good way of like trying new foods and desserts and things, isn't it?
It's a little dangerous on the waistline, but it's a fun perk. But I definitely have no regrets of going into commercial work. It's a great thing that I can do during the week while my kids are in school. You know, I travel I travel into New York City to do it. I work on my schedule. It's a lot less stressful than weddings, you know, but it's extremely profitable, and it's very rewarding, so.
No, that's weird. Do you think that's because of it being such a big city with so many different places to eat then?
Actually, I think people who are in extremely large cities like New York or LA or London are at a disadvantage. There's almost, I find that if you're in a what I call a big little city, so someplace like, I know, Birmingham, Alabama, which people wouldn't think it's a big city in, but it's still on a smaller scale, Tucson, Arizona, or if you are maybe Santa Barbara, California. If you're in these smaller places that are still large cities, but not on the mass international city scale, you can really work with people and set yourself up as being the expert in that field. Whereas when you are in such a huge city, you're just one of thousands and thousands of photographers, and you have to really kind of work even harder to be seen and to separate yourself from the pool of people that, you know, are there. So it, in one sense, yes, you have more opportunities, but in another sense, it's harder to be seen by those opportunities. You
That
have
makes
to
sense.
really work on your marketing, and there's a lot more that has to be done on the business side, to get seen.
It's something I interviewed Claim a Bride, a big portrait photographer works with like Kanye West and people like that. And you can't shoot anyone more famous, but he said life wasn't easy. He said, I had to go knocking on doors 30 years ago to get where I am, and now he's the opposite way around. He's teaching, so he's using his skill for good. And I think that's amazing. But yeah, it's not an easy thing, is it?
No, and anytime you make any type of career shift, you know, you're kind of always starting again from the bottom and working your way up, which, you know, has to be done. It doesn't matter how successful I was in weddings. I was unknown in the commercial world when I started. So I have to work my way back up.
Oh, that's cool. It seems funny now that I interview so many people from New York. It is uncanny from where I am in the world. So everyone I'm chatting to, because the first thing I don't think about is where you are. The first thing I look at is your photographs, and that complaint. And then I'm like, no, it's not someone in New York again. What's happening?
There are a lot of photographers in New York, but also there are a lot of photographers like me who, I mean, I don't live in New York City. I live in New Jersey, about a half an hour outside of New York City. But most of my work, like I travel into New York City for the vast majority of my work if I'm not, you know, traveling all over the world or whatever. So it's just,
When we
it's an international hub. So yeah, everybody goes there.
exactly, and when you say New York, you could be talking of hundreds of miles from each other. And I looked at the distance from where I was in Manhattan to the Kodak Museum, Kodak Eastman Museum, where Nick works, and I'm like, oh my God, it's like 5 hours.
Yeah.
And
New York City is a small little island, but New York State is a massive state. It takes hours and hours to get across. Yeah.
yeah, I mean, you're practically in Canada,
Oh yeah.
like Rochester, where he is.
It's
I was like,
way up there.
wow. Because obviously I'm learning a lot about the country as I move around and interview people. And my geography is not too bad, so I'm learning my time zones pretty well. So
That's
you
all right.
have
We
to, I
still get
mean.
them confused.
Well, it's all good. So what's your motivation to keep shooting then with film?
Oh, with film. Well, I love
Love.
shooting. Yeah, it allows me to do my job and create the art that I see in my head with minimal work behind a computer. And I love that. I've never loved editing. You can be very good at something and proficient at it, but not love doing it. And that's how I feel about editing on a computer. That's how I feel about being on a computer in general. I find being on social media and doing all this a necessary evil. It's all part of marketing and business, but I love the real experiences. Like, I am probably the worst photographer in the world when it comes to taking pictures of moments that I'm a part of. I tell my kids, I'm like, sorry, kids, like, you don't have a ton of images, because we go on vacation, and I mean, this is usually the camera that I have handy, or I have like a small little 35 millimeter film camera that I keep in my purse and I pull out and I take, you know, take some images. I would rather be in the moment. And I feel like film allows me to be in that moment more. Film allows me to be with my family more. It allows me to just have less time editing and behind a computer, but it also allows me to be more creative because, like I said, it mimics how my eyes see the world.
So I think I'll always
shoot film.
I totally agree. I'm exactly the same. I'm always in trouble with my wife. We've got no pictures of the girls compared, mine is similar age to yours. And, you know, we've got a big hole up on the wall. She says, that's waiting for you to do a photograph. It's never going to happen. So I'm going to have to get a friend to do it.
You always have to get people to do it. My kids are awful when I have the camera. And then you're not in them too. So I make it a point. I do make it a point that every year I hire a different one of my friends. And I like to do different styles too. So sometimes I'll hire a digital shooter. Sometimes I'll hire a film shooter. I really like just every year have something a little unique, a little, you know, different to memorialize that year of our lives. So.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I don't know if it is a thing with those film photographers. I don't know. Like, we just naturally don't do stuff like this. And like you say, you're more in the moment.
I think it's one or the other. I have a number of friends who I think their camera is like surgically attached to their hand and their eyeball, and they're always, always, always shooting. And I respect that. I think it's amazing the stories and memories that they're creating for their children and their grandchildren. And then I feel like it's either that or it's like us, where it's just, you know, I pick up the camera when I'm either working or when I feel the need to, but otherwise I don't document everything because I'm just kind of enjoying it.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a right way or a wrong way.
I don't know. No, I agree with you on that. It's all part of life, isn't it? So what is exciting you in the world of photography at the minute? Is there anything you've seen, anything you like doing yourself? Or?
I mean, honestly, I really think the whole movement of things being less posed, more organic, is really great to see. I think that everybody is kind of moving towards, I think for a long time, the past probably 8 years or so, especially in the wedding world, it's been very stylized, which is beautiful. But it all kind of started to look the same to me. And I think there's a lot of uniqueness coming back out. I think that photographers are embracing what they love and realizing that you don't have to be everybody's cup of tea. I don't want to be everybody's cup of tea. I really don't. I want to be unique to what makes me happy, and then the right clients will find me. So that kind of resurgence of individualized art and creativity is nice to see. I'm seeing it in the weddings. I'm seeing it in blogs more, even in like wedding blogs, where they're showcasing very unique styles of photography and very different styles of photography, as opposed to kind of everything looking the same.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Yeah, I can see what you mean. I know I've got a few wedding photographer friends, and I can see some of their work changing. I don't think it's just a skill thing. I think it's finding time where they just start playing and they get better and more creative, and then couples actually start liking that, and then that becomes normal.
Right. I
So
mean, that's all it takes. It takes a few brave souls to be like, nope, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I like. This is what I'm going to show. And then you're surprised that, hey, there's other people like me out there. There's other people that appreciate what I'm doing. And there goes a new trend.
Yeah, it's surprising. Well, we are now part of the show where we go into my random questions.
Okay, random questions.
Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do this.
What ice cream flavor would you invent?
I would invent, let's see. I would invent sweet cream ice cream with fresh raspberries, a Nutella drizzle, and just work with me on this one, a pistachio crunch.
Pistachio crunch. So you've got a bit of nut, you've got a bit of fruit. Okay.
You've got the salty, you've got the sweet, you've got the crunch, you've got the fruit. It all works together.
I'm sure it's out. That could be like a new lifestyle thing for you then.
Could be. I could create ice cream flavors.
Yeah, why not? You'd enjoy taking pictures of that.
I would. And eating it.
Would you rather suffer with insomnia or narcolepsy?
Ooh. Well, I already suffer with insomnia half the time, so I'm just going to keep with my insomnia because my brain starts thinking and going and doing, so I would definitely rather do that.
It's awful, isn't it, when we're just like that? Can't stop. MySpace, Twitter, Facebook, but what comes next?
Apparently TikTok, but I don't understand it. Some sort of video thing where people are doing dancing to music. I don't know. I'm too old for all these new little social media things. So, I mean, I kind of stopped at Instagram and I was like, that's good for me. I think I tried Snapchat for about 30 seconds and that was it. I couldn't handle it. Honestly, I still think Instagram is going strong because I still think we're in a very visual world. I think people like the instant gratification of the visual image. And I think anywhere social media goes is going to just be more visual images, more connecting with people through seeing what they're saying.
Yeah. I mean, it's changed things for lots of us. I know there's quite a lot of photographers in the USA who actually earn money through Instagram. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit different over here. The marketplace is different. For us bloggers and podcasters, I mean, it's a great resource. You know, if I had looked at Mark's blog, I wouldn't have come across your lovely work, would I? So,
that's true.
Yeah, it's how things happen, isn't it? So, Pretty Woman or Dirty Dancing?
Oh, come on. How do you choose? on the one hand, you've got Julia Roberts, who is just awesome and funny. But then I gotta go with Dirty Dancing. Patrick Swayze, dude, come on. He was fun. I loved him. Although I loved him better in Roadhouse, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah. Fair enough. A new law has passed and you can only own one lens. What would it be?
Oh, see. Now, if you had asked me that 5 years ago, it would be a very different question. It'd be a very, very different answer. Right now, because of what I shoot and how I shoot, I would say it would have to be like a 35 millimeter equivalent because I love seeing more of the big picture. I love more of street photography. I like telling a story more, and I think you need more of an image to tell a story. So if I had to pick, it'd be like a 35 millimeter equivalent.
It'd be quite a strange law, to be fair. I got to admit, but you know.
Yeah, very strange law.
Very specific, only aimed at a few people, but you know.
Oh,
there'll be some way of taxing us. Make a compelling statement why the moon landing was faked.
it wasn't. Sorry, I was a science teacher, okay?
All right.
I taught Earth science for 11 years. So
Okay.
part of that was space. So you were asking the wrong person to say that it was faked. I think we have been there. I think we're going back. Space exploration is amazing. Science is the greatest thing ever. And if you ever go on any type of retreat or workshop with me, like my poor people who went to Iceland for the film workshop that I taught, I will also teach you all about geology, weather, all of those things. It's like a science
Okay.
lesson slash photography lesson.
Fantastic. Sounds a bargain. What would Jesus's social media handle be?
It would be
It's known as all sorts, isn't it? So.
good. That's a good one. I would say it would have to be like at JC. Just simple.
JC,
At
okay. Yeah.
JC. Just JC because
Of
he doesn't
course.
need anything more. But underneath it would say, I said be nice people. I meant it. That's what I would say.
Okay, that'd be yeah, I like that, yeah. That's cool. Right, well, thank you so much for that, Christine. That was good fun.
I like the random
Someone said every podcast should have random questions and they loved it. I was like, oh, thank you very much.
I think so. You get to know so much more about the person through the random questions.
Yeah, you can honestly, some of the questions you ask, you can find out some very strange things about them. So there we go.
Well,
I know
hopefully
you know
nothing
me.
too strange here.
No, well, no, we found out you're a teacher. So that's very useful information, isn't it? So we're at point of the show where I normally give my guests a chance to talk about where we can find you, social media, websites, workshops. So over to you.
Thank you. So my website is very simple. It's ChristinaZen.com. That's Zen because my last name is Blanarovich and nobody can say it, spell it, anything. So I actually named my company after my oldest son whose name is Zen. So it's ChristinaZen.com. And then Instagram is also just Christina.Zen. Very easy to find me. I don't tweet because I just don't have any important things to say. Like I said, simple social
Not yet.
media is the easiest social media for me. So that's that. And then if you are looking to do any information, learn anything about film or learn anything about transitioning into commercial photography, I do one-on-one mentoring or I sometimes speak at different conferences. I'll be speaking March 2020 in San Diego at the Hybrid Conference, which is an amazing film shooter, hybrid, digital, everything photography conference. A really good
Cool.
hands-on one that I highly recommend. And I'll be speaking and teaching about commercial work there and food photography. But yeah, if anybody is looking to learn more about film, I do a lot of one-on-one teaching on film and I do teaching on transitioning out of that wedding world or into the commercial world as well. So I think that's that teacher part of me. I like kind of coaching and helping people get started.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a nice thing to do, isn't it? And why not do it on a subject you're knowledgeable and love?
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, that's cool. Thank you so much for that. And my final question for you, then, because I know you are dying to get off to, well, you've got a booking, haven't you? So I always ask my guests if there's a recommendation for someone else to come on the show. It could be someone you know, friends, associates, someone you aspire. Just an idea for someone who's maybe different to someone I've interviewed as well. Have you
Wow,
got any
that's
ideas?
you're putting me on the spot because I have so many people that I could like throw names at you. I am very lucky to be a part of a really wonderful network of about 100 photographers. My BC family, we're very tight, we're very close, and honestly, it's just some of the most talented photographers in the world. And to be honest, like, there's digital, there's film, there's commercial, there's wedding, there's everybody. So I would say if you want a photography team who just absolutely is the best when it comes to business practices and growing a strong photography studio with multiple people, my friends Chris and Dee Robinson, they are in California, they're out of Sacramento area, and it's a husband and wife team. She is just incredible. She is like the business guru. I love her, and I think she could give a lot of value to your listeners because she knows so much about just how to market yourself that people like want to be near you.
Now that sounds really, yeah, because that's very different to anyone I've worked with, and I have tried reaching out to people like that, so yeah, that'd be awesome actually.
I can definitely hook you guys up.
Yeah, no, that's wicked, thank you so much. The last thing we've got to say to everyone is obviously if you enjoy the show and Christina, all the links will be in the show notes. Just go to my website, and everything will be linked there, so that's flogger.co.uk. And if you really enjoy the show, please leave a review. So, thank you so much for your time, Christina.
Thank you
I
for
know
reaching
we've.
out and thank you for having me. It's so kind of
No,
you.
no, that, no, that, that's not a problem. It's lovely to see something different. And I love getting a variety of guests on. And having a food photographer is ace. And somebody who's moved from digital to film is even better. So, I'll be telling Mark and. At ShotKit that we've spoke. So you have a great day, and I hope your shoot goes okay.
I'm sure it will. Thank you.
Thanks a lot,
It's great talking
Christina.
to you. All right, bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. Hey guys, thanks a lot for listening. I hope you enjoyed that episode with Christina. So don't forget, all the links are on my website, flogger.co.uk. And you can see things like her Instagram, her website, and how we originally found each other. So, just a quick one there. So, you've got ChristinaZen.com if you want to go straight to her site, and you can see all her amazing images. It's always great to have guests on the show, especially people again in different areas. I'm really loving bringing you the diversity. There's still many more planned. So please do carry on supporting the show. Obviously, subscribe on your podcast player. And please do share it on social media and tag a few people if possible. That's always nice. And if you can spend 30 seconds to a minute writing an iTunes review, that is wonderful. All you have to do is open up the podcast app on a iPhone or iPad, find the name Photography Insights, or search my name Andrew Wormsley, and then you can see my show. Go down the list of episodes, and somewhere near the bottom you can write your review. That's be very much appreciated. And of course, I will see you on the next episode. Thanks a lot for listening.